Apple products, another Facebook security issue, Google gets into gaming, plus 5 ways to watch movies free, and more. What's going on? I'm Rich DeMiro. This is Rich on Tech, the podcast where I talk about all the fun stuff that I think you should know about happening in the tech world. So this week was an interesting one because Apple made announcements without a big event. Normally, if Apple is announcing new products, they're going to ask journalists to come up to their campus in Cupertino and go hands-on with them, have a big stage presence. But this time around, it was much more unique. So let's go over what Apple announced and how they did it. So instead of a big event, basically on Monday, March 18th, Tim Cook just tweeted, and all he tweeted was a picture of himself drawing on an iPad mini. And this was very early in the morning, well, for us here in the Pacific time zone. But it was just a picture of Tim Cook writing on an iPad mini with an Apple Pencil. And of course, that set the Twitter sphere into craziness because, well, you can't write on an iPad mini with an Apple Pencil. So of course, we knew this was a new product. And the funny thing is that a lot of people thought the iPad mini, including myself, was kind of dead. I bought these for my kids. I love them. It's been, I looked at my receipt. It was like April 2017 when I bought these things. So about 2 years ago, 2017, 2018, 2019. I don't know if that's 2 or 3 years, but the reality is I feel like they've had them for a while. I feel like theirs are perfectly fine, but I do love the idea of having that Apple Pencil capability. So let me go over some of the changes here. You got the 7.9-inch iPad mini, and this now includes the A12 Bionic chip, which is giving 3 times the performance, according to Apple. And the A12 Bionic is the same chip that is in the latest iPhones, which is really cool. So you're getting the most powerful chip that Apple has today inside the iPad mini, and it's going to be in stores next week. You also get the Apple Pencil support. It doesn't come with the Apple Pencil, but you get that support. And I think this is a really good combination because to me, I wanted to use the iPad mini as sort of a calendar and notebook. So this might actually work for my own workflow because for some reason I've tried all these to-do list apps and they just don't work for me. I like to write down a list of everything I need to do on a daily basis, and that's what I want to do with this iPad mini. So not sure if that's worth $400 to me, but again, it's really cool that we now have this option. And I just think it's a fun device to have if you have an iPhone, let's say, and you want something that's more like a notebook that you can write on with the Apple Pencil. This can definitely fit that, especially for those creative and educational use case scenarios. So of course, the better processor is going to give you support for augmented reality. You can also get a cellular connection if you want. They didn't really do much with the cameras. They do say they're upgraded, but I don't know about that. I'd have to check more into that. But I think that you don't buy an iPad for the camera. That is for sure. Although I've seen a lot of people take pictures on them, but the cameras are there as well. So when it comes to the iPad Air, that was improved as well with the A12 Bionic chip. So that is a 10.5-inch display, and that also has Apple Pencil support as well, and a lot of the same features. So, I mean, if you're looking at this, now we have basically the iPad mini, then you have the iPad Air, and then you have the iPad, it goes iPad mini, then iPad Air, and then you have the iPad Pro. The iPad mini starts at $399, which is kind of unique because now you have this iPad mini that's actually more expensive than the standard iPad. So that's kind of weird. So that's $399 or $529 for Wi-Fi and cellular. Then you have the 10.5-inch iPad Air. That starts at $499. And then, of course, you have the iPad Pro above that one. So what you're going to need if you want to use that Apple Pencil is the first generation Apple Pencil. That's $100. So that's also interesting that they did not lower the price on the first generation Apple Pencil. So, and also the fact that they went with the first generation Apple Pencil. So if you're getting an Apple Pencil for the iPad mini or the iPad Air, you want to make sure you get the first generation device, which is the standard one. The new one is the one that has the magnetic wireless charging with the new iPad Pro. So kind of an interesting decision, but I get it from an R&D standpoint. They already had this Apple Pencil first generation. They've already figured it out. They already did all the research and development on it, and it doesn't cost them anything to just keep this. And it's probably cheaper because the margins as the years go on with the Apple Pencil are probably bigger because this thing hasn't changed price in a couple years. So the fact that they're still charging $100 for that, they make a lot more money today than they did when they first introduced it. But that's a rundown of the iPad Air and the iPad Mini. Now let's take a look at the iMac. Not too much to talk about when it comes to the iMac, except A, I also want this because I'd like to have a dedicated computer in my office for all my video editing and all my audio recording. But this iMac is a pretty good value. They basically just got updates to the processors. So the 21.5-inch iMac now features 8th generation quad-core and for the first time 6-core processors. Then the 27-inch iMac for the first time features up to 9th generation 6-core and 8-core processors. And again, you have to remember those words, up to. That does not mean that's what you're going to get out of the box. A lot of these things you do have to upgrade the base price to get the best of what Apple's offering. So if you want the 21.5-inch iMac that has a Retina 4K display, that starts at $1,300. I think that's a really good value for a desktop computer at home. Now, I understand that you can get an all-in-one from HP or something like that for about $600, but I do believe that these iMacs are sort of better than that because you're able to do more on them. I think that you can, well, when it comes to creativity, I think that these are a better creator's device. Also, they're simple, everything just kind of works, and I think these Mac computers last for a really long time. The 27-inch iMac with a Retina 5K display starts at $1,800. Then you have a non-Retina iMac, and that's $1,100. So Apple is kind of famous for doing this. They always give you an option that's a lot cheaper, that appeals to people that are really budget conscious, but the reality is it's not generally the best thing to purchase because you're missing a lot of the main features. So to buy a non-Retina iMac display at this point just doesn't seem very smart to me. So if you're spending that $1,100, you might as well cough up the extra $200 to bring you up to that Retina 4K display, which is going to age better over the next 3 to 4 to 5 years that you have this computer. Now let's talk about the third and final product that Apple updated this week, the AirPods. And I like how they threw in that they are the world's most popular wireless headphones. And you know what? I believe it, because if you go to the gym, pretty much the AirPods are it. After that, it's the wired headphones that actually come with the iPhone. And then you see some other assorted wireless headphones and earbuds and all that kind of stuff. But realistically, when I think wireless headphones, the AirPods is pretty much it. So they have the new H1 chip designed by Apple. And this is the chip that Apple designed to really make these things work on top of Bluetooth in a much better way. So Bluetooth, you know, obviously gives you your basic pairing and all that ability, but with this chip that Apple design does is it kind of connects to Apple devices faster, and it also manages things on the device better. So one of the new features is Hey Siri. So you can actually just use that command as I activate my iPhone. You can use that command with the AirPods. Now, the funny thing is, I was using the Hey Siri command for a while, even without this being built into the AirPods, because if your phone is close enough to you while you're running, you can still activate that, and it kind of feels like the AirPods are doing it. It's not as pretty, and it's not as perfect, but you know, it works if your phone is nearby when you're running. That's pretty much when I use it. But the other device features here for the AirPods, faster connect time. So now I think they connect pretty fast, but of course Apple is really good at telling you what the device didn't do so well before once the new one comes out. So we thought when we first saw the demo of the AirPods on stage that they are so magical because all you do is you open up the wireless case and next thing you know, your phone says, hey, would you like to pair these? And I thought it was pretty darn fast. But now Apple's saying it's even faster to connect to devices, especially when you're playing music, which is kind of interesting. So if you're going from, let's say, listening to music on the iPhone to listening to music on the Apple Watch, that switching process will be a lot faster. They say it's 2 times faster. I don't think that's a reason to get new AirPods for sure. In fact, I'm not sure there's a reason to upgrade to these AirPods if you already have a pair, right? I don't think you need to buy a new pair of AirPods. Now, there's a feature that they added that is kind of cool that you can upgrade to, and that's the wireless charging case. So the new AirPods come with an optional wireless charging case. So I probably would have liked to seen Apple, you know, just throw in the wireless charging case, but they decided not to do that. So you can get these now for $159. you know, for the standard, you know, just regular wireless AirPods, $199 if you want to get them with the wireless charging case, or if you already have your AirPods and you just want to upgrade for that wireless charging, you can add the case for $79. So again, Apple's given us some options here with these. $79 for the wireless charging case. So you're talking, you're bringing the price of your original AirPods. So you're talking $80 on top of $160. So you're talking another $40 premium over the $199 if you just bought them with the new wireless charging case. So I don't know. It might be a better deal. I'm not sure what these things are going for on eBay, but it might actually be a better deal just to buy new AirPods with the wireless charging and then sell the old ones on eBay or maybe give them to a friend. So that might be, I don't know. I'm just giving you options here. Also, you can now add personal engraving to the AirPods case. So that's free during checkout. And I'm kind of hit or miss on the whole engraving thing. I like it because if you lose your stuff, you can, you know, someone be able to call you and tell you, hey, I found your AirPods, but I don't know. Is that very realistic? I don't know. If I found someone's AirPods, I probably wouldn't want to wear them. That's for sure. But you know, and in case I didn't mention it, you do get some more talk time. They say an extra hour of talk time, which is kind of funny. I don't understand why they keep saying an hour of talk time versus music, because I would think that more people use these to listen to music than they do to talk. So I'm not sure if that's specifically talk time or if that's specifically, you know, if they're just talking audio and they like to say talk time. But I don't know, maybe people use it for both. I personally use my AirPods more for just, you know, listening to music and running. I do take calls on it throughout the house sometimes. But I will say that the AirPods overall are probably the best wireless headphones that I've used. I think that they're simple. They work. I like the design. They don't fall out of my ears. And if you're comparing them against something like the Galaxy Buds, so I think those are really good too. They are, I would say, pretty good at not falling out. I did have one case where when I was working out and I did one exercise, they did want to fall out of my ear. So I will say I did not change the little kind of silicone tips on them to try to keep them in my ear. You know how they have like different sizes for those things that you can put on the end. I did not change those to make it bigger or smaller, so maybe it would fit better. But I still think the Galaxy Buds are great. But I do think the AirPods overall, just a little bit better because they're just a little simpler than the Galaxy Buds. But again, the Galaxy Buds do come with that wireless charging case, and those are only $130, including the wireless charging case. So you're talking, those are basically $70 less than the AirPods. Of course, you're not going to get Hey Siri with those. So again, it's good to have options. And clearly now, whether you're on Android or iOS, you can get some headphones that work well and kind of have some nice fun features. So it's interesting. Google is getting into gaming now. They have this new product called Stadia, which is a whole new way to play. So this is kind of like taking gaming to the next level. And what Google's doing is, of course, Google is, they love to do interesting things with data. They love to kind of challenge the status quo, right? So historically, if you want a game, you need a big console. You need a high-powered console. The console keeps getting better over the years to be able to play better games. And of course, it all costs money to upgrade. But what Google's doing now is they are taking the console out of the equation. So they are starting sort of a streaming service for games. So everything is instant. Everything is Wi-Fi, internet, you know, powered. You can play on any screen. So you can play it on a TV, a laptop, a desktop, tablet, mobile phone. And what Google is doing is basically streaming or live streaming the gameplay through the internet to your device. So your device doesn't need to be high powered. All it needs is an internet connection and a screen. And as long as it can play video, it's playing your game. So it's kind of a new paradigm, a new way of thinking about gaming, because all the heavy lifting is being done on the server side in the background. And of course, Google has amazing technology with its servers. It's got this globally connected network of Google data servers that it's saying. And it's saying this is really going to free players from the limitations of traditional consoles and PCs. And I do believe that to be true. It's just a matter of if they can get this to work right. So in the past, we've heard about these kind of services. The challenge has been latency, which means how fast does what happens on screen change or is affected from the time that you press a button on your controller. So if you're playing a game and you're pressing the buttons on the controller and it's laggy on the screen, that's going to be a problem. It's not going to work. It has to be instantaneous. imagine you're watching Jeopardy and you always see those people that are like smashing the little activation button and it's not working. That's what it would be like playing this game if it wasn't, if the latency wasn't perfect. So again, Google seems to think they figured this out. They demoed it at a event up in San Francisco, and they say they are aiming for resolutions up to 4K and 60 frames per second with HDR and surround sound, which is basically like the best console, you know, the best console experience you can imagine without buying a console. So this will work with Chromecast, and of course, you know, that's for the TV, but the rest of the systems, you know, the laptop, the desktop, the tablet, the mobile phone, all you really need is, I'm guessing there's going to be some new app that you have to download. The other interesting thing that they're doing with this is they are making it so that if you're watching someone play a game on YouTube, which there's a lot of people playing games on YouTube, right? Those live, those streamers, kind of like the Twitch streamers. The other interesting thing they're doing with this is if you're watching someone play a game on YouTube or even a trailer or whatever, anything game related on YouTube, and of course, YouTube is a huge place where people go to share and look at games and all that kind of stuff, share gaming play, you'll be able to actually one click and then play that game instantly. So imagine you're watching, they give the example of someone playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey. So while you're watching that video on YouTube, right underneath, it'll say play now. And next thing you know, you'll be playing the game. No downloads, no updates, no patches, no installs, according to Google. And it's kind of what they've done with either buying movies, you know, if you watch a movie trailer and you can immediately rent the movie, or if you're listening to a song and it's, you know, trying to push you to buy that song. So I don't know if they still do that, but they used to. I know you could, like, you know, get links to like iTunes and all these other things. But that's kind of the idea. And it's a very smart one, because imagine, like, I watch my son, he's watching these guys play games on YouTube, and then all of a sudden he's like, oh, I want to play that game. And now he just clicks it. And again, you don't need any equipment, which is really cool, or minimum equipment. There is a controller that they devised. It's called the Stadia controller, and it connects to your device through Wi-Fi so that it's as fast as possible. There's also a button on there for instant capture, so you can save and share gameplay in up to 4K. Very cool. There's also a Google Assistant button and a built-in microphone. So Stadia sounds really cool, and I think that this could open up video gaming to a whole new group of people, not just the console folks, but also people in other countries that may not have access to you know, as much as we do here in the US. But as long as you have that internet connection, and I'm imagining it's going to work on a wide variety of them, just the way Netflix does, this could be big. YouTube says, or Google says, it's going to come out later this year. Again, right now, I haven't seen anyone actually use this except for the demos on stage that they did. But I cannot wait to try this out, because I love the idea of just kind of changing our paradigm and our perception of what gaming can be. And also, it gives the game creators, I mean, unlimited access. I mean, they're talking now, they can think about creating games using much more horsepower, because they don't have to think about every end user's console. They can now just think of one giant data server and, you know, code for that, and people, no matter what, can play it. Pretty cool. Gosh, I almost don't want to talk about this next story, because I'm kind of sick of talking about Facebook and all their issues. And there's a lot of them. And now we're talking hundreds of millions of Facebook users had their account passwords stored in plain text. This is according to Krebs on Security, which came out with the blog post, and then Facebook came out with their own blog post explaining what happened. But the bottom line is, as far back as 2012, Facebook says that they had basically been storing users' passwords in plain text. So that means that anyone can see them and anyone can search for them. So the database was searchable by more than 20,000 Facebook employees. And we're talking a lot of passwords here, 200 million, between 200 million and 600 million, according to Krebs on Security. Facebook, in their official blog post, said that they will notify hundreds of millions of Facebook Lite users. So a lot of this sounds like it had to do with Facebook Lite, and that's used in other, mainly in other countries, including India, because that's a lighter version of the app that doesn't have as many features. It's easier on data and downloads. Then they said tens of millions of other Facebook users. I'm imagining those are in the US and other places like Europe. And then tens of thousands of Instagram users. So again, not much you can do about this, except it just goes to question again Facebook and, you know, their privacy practices in general. I mean, that's the main thing that you get out of this, is like, come on, these are the people that have a lot of our data, and they're just storing this stuff in plain text, letting any employees search it. Now, they're saying that employees didn't abuse this, so I don't think that it's a case of employees abusing this, but I do think it's a case of, come on, Facebook, you can't do stuff like this. But again, the tried and true security practices still continue here. Number one, don't use passwords that are, you know, your standard, you know, whatever it is. I don't know. I mean, there's, you know, everyone uses like the same thing, you know, like the street you grew up on or something. Like, don't use those passwords, right? Because they're just too easy. Don't use the same password over and over. And again, this is another reason why you don't want to do that. Because if an unscrupulous Facebook employee got your password and they saw that it was something pretty simple and recognizable, like, you know, blue car 9822, you know, they know that you might be using that on other websites and it wouldn't be too tough for them to try that on a different website. So I recommend using some sort of password manager, whether it's one that's built in to iOS, whether it's Dashlane, whether it's LastPass or 1Password, get on board with one of those systems and stick to it and start using them, because I'll show you my passwords. They're crazy. They're gobbledygook. I make like 16 characters, whatever they are. I don't care. I'll do as many characters as they can take on the website, and it's all crazy. I mean, it's like, you know, that little tilde thing or whatever. Tilde? How do you say that? I don't know. You know, it's like all those little weird characters on your keyboard, imagine, you know, mixed with numbers and letters. That's a good password, because I can show that to someone and A, they're not going to even remember it, and B, it's not used anywhere else. So if you can, on all the websites that support it, turn on two-factor authentication. That will send you a text message when someone tries to log into your account. That way you're alerted and you can approve or not approve the login. Couple stories from Amazon this week. So first off, they have an all new Kindle. This is the first time they put a light on the entry level Kindle. So now you can get the new Kindle for $90. And again, it has that light built in. It's not the best Kindle in the world, but as an entry level Kindle, it's pretty decent. It does say, or Amazon says, they do have updated electronic ink technology for better contrast. It also now uses capacitive touch to prevent accidental swipes, which is smart, because I don't know how many times I've been reading a Kindle, my kid comes up and kind of taps it or touches it. Next thing you know, it swipes back to, like, you know, 10, 20, 30 pages back, and I have no idea where I'm going. You know, I can't get back to the page I was on without swiping through a million times. So that's kind of nice. It has 167 pixels per inch display. So that's not the highest resolution in the world, but it will work and it's nice. Now, if you want to step up, and I probably think if you're going to invest in a Kindle, maybe the next one up is better to get. That's the Kindle Paperwhite. That has a higher resolution 300 PPI display. It also has waterproofing, and then you have the Kindle Oasis, which is really high end. That's for people who literally like read so much. That's like the best. It's like the Ferrari of Kindles. It's a little bit more expensive than you might think, but it is a really nice Kindle. I think the middle one is probably best for most people. The new Kindle is going to start shipping on April 10th. And if you have an old Kindle and you're thinking of ditching it for the new one, right now, Amazon's going to give you a 25% discount on the new device if you trade in your old one. So you'll get a certain value for your old Kindle, but you're going to get 25% off the new device as well. So I think that's a pretty good deal. And again, Kindles are something that you probably want to buy on one of these big discount days that Amazon throws, like one of their, you know, like what's that digital day they have, like in July, or not digital, the Prime Day, that's right. So like on a Prime Day. But my theory with these Kindles is that you don't want to pay full price for them, because Amazon's house products are the ones they discount the most. So use a service like CamelCamelCamel.com to set a tracking alert. So you can track the price of any device on Amazon. And when it drops, CamelCamelCamel will send you an email to let you know that that price has lowered. You can also use something like Wikibuy, which I use a lot. And there's a couple of these services out there. But my point is, when it comes to the Amazon devices, 25% off is pretty good. So I think that's, you know, $90, 90 divided by 4, it's 45. That's almost, yeah, it's like 20 bucks off. So that's pretty good. That brings it down to like 69. So I think that that's a decent price if you have one to trade in. If you don't have one to trade in, I say just wait for some sort of sale from Amazon to buy this thing. And they do go on sale throughout the year. All right, the other story about Amazon, I'm not going to spend too much time on this one. I just thought it was interesting that Amazon now has their own dedicated skincare line. I believe it's called Belei, B-E-L-E-I. And I'll be honest, I bought a couple of these products because, you know, I take care of my skin. And, you know, I've used Kiehl's in the past. That's pretty much what I use, like, forever. I started with their shaving cream. Then, of course, you just end up buying all the men's products from them. But, you know, I'm always looking for something better and cheaper. And these Amazon products, you know, like I trust Amazon that they're a big company. They're basically using the efficiencies of their platform to save money on their products. So when you buy something like Kiehl's, you're paying a huge premium for the Kiehl's name, for all the stores that they run, for all the people they hire. And, you know, you're getting high quality stuff, I would hope, but you're also paying a very big premium for that. So with Amazon, I'm assuming or hoping that with this dedicated skincare line, you're not paying as much because they're basically using those efficiencies in their system to your advantage, which means they don't have to pay a lot for advertising. You know, R&D is basically their biggest cost. So they've got 12 different products, and let's see here. Collection has 12 different items with everything from retinol moisturizer to vitamin C. So you've got skincare concerns like acne, fine lines, wrinkles, dark spots, dehydration, dullness, and more. And I like this. None of them have, all the products are free of parabens, sulfites, and fragrance-free, and they're not tested on animals. So again, I went ahead and bought like some of the sunscreen and stuff like that, but just check it out. I mean, the products are like $22 to $35, I think is, let's see, the most expensive is $40. And I think I got 25% off my first order of these products. So again, it's just me, you know, I've been taking care of my skin for a while, so I like the idea of saving money. I like the idea of high quality products, and anywhere I can do those two things, I'm in. Postmates has a new feature called Postmates Party that is basically using big data to everyone's advantage. And what they're doing is they're becoming more efficient at deliveries because you don't have to pay a delivery fee if you use one of these restaurants in the Postmates Party tab of the app. So let me explain what this is all about. The Postmates Party tab shows restaurants that other people in your area are ordering from. And so the idea being is that if someone else is ordering from that restaurant, one of their Postmates is already driving over to that restaurant to pick up an order. It doesn't cost them much more to pick up a second order, yours or someone else's, and now deliver that to your house. So it's one less trip for the driver, it's more orders for the restaurants, and then the person ordering doesn't have to pay that delivery fee. So it could be, you know, $3.49, $1.99, whatever the delivery fee is. No matter what size the order is, you're not going to pay it. So again, I feel like a lot of people are going to go just to this Postmates Party tab and select restaurants from there because you know you're not going to have to pay a delivery fee. But I love the idea of this because it works for all parties involved, right? The delivery driver is being more efficient because he doesn't have to go back to that restaurant to pick up a second order right after he just got out of that restaurant to pick up the first order. The people, it's more efficient because, you know, you're saving money, so it's good for them. For Postmates, it's more efficient. For the environment, it's more efficient. And, you know, for Postmates, I'm sure, and the restaurants, this probably causes more orders at a place that's trending. And it's brilliant. It really is. It reminds me of Uber Pool because it's kind of the same idea. Two people going in the same direction. You know, it doesn't cost any more for Uber to pick up that second person, but now they can charge that second person and maybe charge them a little bit less than they would if it was just bringing one person. So same kind of idea. Postmates Party is available in LA and also some other cities around the nation. It's available right now in the app, and it's just such a smart idea. So kudos to you, Postmates. I know when Postmates first started, I used it a lot more than I do now. I feel like it's gotten a lot more expensive for delivery. Like, things add up really quick. So I don't use it as much as I used to, but maybe this will cause me to use it more. In fact, it probably will, like on a Friday night. If a restaurant's trending that I want to order from, I will definitely give it another spin. The Opera browser for Android has a new feature, a built-in VPN. So the VPN is free, it's unlimited, and they say it's easy to use. So if you're not familiar with a VPN, it basically routes your traffic through a secondary server so that whatever service you're using to access the internet can't really see what you're doing. So they'll just see that you're accessing this special server. They don't really know what you're accessing through that server because it's all encrypted. So how can you use this? Well, if you're connecting to public Wi-Fi in something like a coffee shop, airport, hotels, all your requests are sent through a secure tunnel that encrypts your traffic. So this means that third parties can't really see what you're doing, nor can they collect sensitive information. So a lot of people like to use this for various reasons, but the reality is it could be useful if you're traveling to a country that you don't necessarily trust with your data, or if you're in an airport or something and you just want an extra layer of security. It's pretty rare to have a free VPN. Usually you're charged for this service because, you know, it costs money to keep those servers up and all that stuff. But Opera has been pushing the VPN in general for a long time now. And, you know, obviously everything comes with a pro and a con. So the fact that this is free, you know, Opera says that they don't collect your data. They're not, let's see. The browser VPN service is a no log service, which means the VPN servers do not log or retain any activity data to protect your users' privacy. So again, it's something that's good to know about. So I don't know if I'd need it every single day, but you know, if I was traveling to a country like China, I'd probably use something like this. Or you know, if I was traveling a lot on the road and I'm logging onto websites in the airport, I'd probably want something like this. It's just one more layer of security, something to know about. Again, it's Opera for Android, built-in VPN. All you have to do is flip a switch, it turns it on, and your browsing is encrypted and secured. And you can also select the region that you want to connect to. So that's pretty simple. You don't have to pay for another private VPN app, and there's no sign-in process for their VPN service, so you don't even have to log in. All you have to do is download the app and flip the switch, and now you're on a VPN. Well, this turned out to be one of the most popular stories I've ever done on KTLA. Five ways to watch movies for free online. And yes, I know there are lots of ways to get free movies online. I'm talking about legitimate ways, okay? So a lot of these companies have started ways. Apparently, people love to watch movies, and I know that, but apparently people love to not pay for these either. So if you have Netflix, sure, I get it. Like, but this is kind of like just another way of accessing things. So let me go over these five ways real quick. The first is IMDb Free Dive. And again, keep in mind with all these services, they're going to be ads. These are ad-supported services. That's how you get these movies for free. Different services have a different amount of ads. Some services require you to log in. But the nice thing is that, look, if you don't want to pay anything, these are free, 100% free. You don't really have to do much, and you can watch movies, and you're bound to find one movie on there that you'll want to watch, right? There might be more movies you want to watch. IMDb Free Dive is from Amazon-owned IMDb. This one is accessible at imdb.com/freedive or an app on Amazon Fire TV devices. So you can't get it on Apple TV or Roku, at least not right now. There's not a whole bunch to watch here that I found, but I did see some recognizable movies like Groundhog Day, Lethal Weapon, Panic Room, and even a few seasons of The Bachelor TV show. So again, I think the idea here is that, you know, if you're looking up a movie on IMDb and it says, hey, stream it for free, that's how a lot of people are going to discover this. Also, I just saw the app pop up on my Fire TV and I was like, what's that? So that's IMDb Free Dive. The Roku channel, now I met with Roku a while back, and they said that this is super popular. Their research tells them that people love watching free movies. So again, these are all ad-supported. They're on Roku devices, and you can also get this on the web as well. So the Roku channel, you do need to create a Roku account to use. You don't have to put in a credit card, but there's also a lot of things on this Roku channel. I know they call it a channel, but it's really like the Roku service, because you can get premium channels like Stars and Showtime that you can subscribe to. There's also live TV, like a lot of these streaming services are on there as well. And I found a lot of stuff on there, recognizable stuff like Men in Black, Legally Blonde, Paddington, Little Miss Sunshine, and more. I think that Roku users really, really like this. And again, it's like one of these things where you get a Roku and you're like, okay, what's for free? Oh, let me check that out. Boom. YouTube free movies. This is kind of hidden on YouTube. They don't make a big deal out of it. And there's only about 100 free movies as far as I can tell. But again, YouTube is on pretty much every device. So that's what makes this one really interesting, is that it's pretty simple to fire up one of these movies. You don't have to download anything extra. Usually YouTube is installed on your phone. So you're going to find these under the YouTube Movies channel under Free to Watch. I also have a link to watch them. I will put that link in the show notes so you can easily access it. But the cool thing about this is, of course, you don't have to log in or sign up to watch them. They work on all your devices. I assume this is just in the United States. I'm not sure because I'm not out of the US, so I don't know if they work in other places. But my pro tip for you is to, you know, let's say your kid wants to watch a show on your iPhone, right? And you just kind of didn't have anything to download. do some work earlier. So go on to the desktop website, go to the link, the YouTube free movies, and then, you know, kind of find a movie or a couple that you might want to watch, and then hover over the movie and that little watch later icon pops up. Tap that icon and now you can easily access these movies on your watch later playlist. So as a little experiment, I had my kid watch All Dogs Go to Heaven. And it was great. I did not see any ads, but I'm also a YouTube premium subscriber, so maybe that's why. But again, YouTube free movies under the YouTube movie channel under free to watch. Tubi is a service that you'll probably hear more and more of. They are kind of building the anti-Netflix. So this is all about free movies and TV shows. They say they have more than Netflix, double the library size, 12,000 selections. Now, obviously, a lot of that is probably garbage because I scrolled through this app and yeah, there's stuff to watch for sure. But a lot of it is kind of like, I actually saw a lot of movie posters that look like the real thing, but like weren't. I was like, wait, what? Jurassic Park? Oh, no, that's not. It's like Jurassic, you know, Jurassic Nightmare or something. But again, there is a lot of stuff on here. They say they have stuff from every major Hollywood, almost every major Hollywood studio. They also have some, you know, some fighting words playlists, like not on Netflix, only free on Tubi, highly rated on Rotten Tomatoes. There's also Baby First TV. So this is a good one to check out if you have a baby and you're getting them started on TV nice and early, like you should be. No, just kidding. But, you know, as a parent, there's sometimes when you just, you know, you need a little time and your kid needs to watch some TV. So Baby First TV is on there as well. And that's programming that's just for, you know, really younger kids. I think as like early as 2 or maybe even younger. Most Popular is a good place to start. You can see what people are watching. I found Sling Blade in there. I found Spaceballs, Bad News Bears, and more. Tubi is a great resource. You don't even need an account to start streaming, but you probably want to sign up with an account because then you can like kind of tag things to watch later, add them to a watch list. Pluto TV, this one's really interesting. This is not necessarily just movies, but this is like literally cable TV without the monthly fee. So when you bring up the website, Pluto TV, or the app, it literally looks like your cable box. There's the programming grid at the bottom, and then stuff just starts playing. It's all live TV. So they've got apps for pretty much every platform, Fire TV, Apple TV, Roku. And again, this is just flipping through channels. So it's kind of like very old school. They also have on demand as well. But they have these movie channels that you can check out, and they all have these fun names. They kind of remind me of like, you know, like movie channels you'd see on TV. So they've got Pluto TV movies, two channels of that, action movies, flicks of fury, classic movies, and more. So I found The Addams Family, Risky Business, Pee-wee's Big Adventure. And again, these are all ad-supported, but they're great resources to watch free movies. Because yeah, it's fine to, you know, Netflix and all that good stuff, but you know, you're going to pay for that. And I personally, at this point, do not like to pay for anything above my subscription services. So I've gotten out of the habit of renting movies for $6 because I'd rather just wait till they make their way to one of these services. And that's been good enough for me. All right, two more apps to tell you about quickly before we go. The first is Warby Parker. This one's just fun if you have glasses or you're thinking of getting glasses or you just want to try a cool app on the iPhone that takes advantage of Face ID and those the cameras that they have on there. Check out the Warby Parker app, the new iOS app. It's really cool. It lets you try on glasses with augmented reality using the Face ID cameras on the iPhone 10 and the 10S, 10S Max, the 10R. It's really cool and it's so realistic. It's probably the best use of augmented reality I've seen. My kid had a ton of fun with this. My wife checked it out. She thought it was hilarious. I did it. It's just so fun. So check out Warby Parker on the iOS App Store, on the Apple App Store. And just if you have one of those newer iPhones with Face ID, you'll be amazed at just how realistic trying on glasses can look in augmented reality. The second is Citizen. This is an app that I'm working on a story for KTLA and it's just so cool. I want to share it. But this is kind of like an app to tell you what's happening in your neighborhood, but way better than Nextdoor. And sorry to trash Nextdoor, but I don't find it very useful. And Citizen, I actually find very useful. So what they've done is they've actually outfitted the cities where they've launched with antennas that intercept the scanner traffic from the police and all the emergency responders and all that stuff. And they're using artificial intelligence to kind of decode what's happening, what's being said on those airwaves. And then they're sending it out to your smartphone on the app. They're not sending out everything. They do kind of filter out things like suicide calls and anything that's like, you know, kind of suspicious person, that kind of stuff, anything that's not really too relevant to the average person. But what's really cool in the couple of weeks that I've been using this app and testing it out is it's pretty good. You can see everything that's happening in your neighborhood. You'll get alerts as to big events in your neighborhood. So if there's like a fire nearby or something that's pretty dangerous happening, or anything that's very notable, you'll get an alert. And the only thing is, the cool thing about this is it's highly localized. So you get an alert when it's in your neighborhood or in an area that you watch. Now, the controversial part of this app is that they do encourage people to go live from the scenes of these things. So with one button, you can go live from what's happening and kind of be like a citizen journalist. Again, the name citizen. So that can get a little dangerous. You know, reporters, you know, at my station that I talk to, you know, things can get dicey out there in the field. So you just have to be careful. But again, I think the benefit of this is that you are a more informed citizen. And you kind of see, the scary part is you see a lot of stuff that goes on in your neighborhood that you would normally not see. All these reports to 911, all the police, you know, come into your neighborhood for various reasons. So it definitely makes you realize that there's a lot going on in this world that is not featured on the 6 o'clock news. But nonetheless, with new data and new ways of slicing and dicing. Like, this stuff has always been available to the public. It's just over the airwaves and nobody has intercepted it before in a meaningful way. That's what Citizen has done. Like, anyone can listen to scanners, right? But they're on public airwaves. But the reality is you have to, you know, you'd have to either have specialized equipment or an app or just sit there and listen. Now you can literally just scroll through this app and see the things that are happening near you. Again, it's called Citizen. Check it out. I think it's really unique. I'll be doing a story on it on KTLA very soon. But it's definitely one of those game-changing kind of things where you realize, like, wow, this can be very useful, especially in a big situation where they're alerting people in real time to imminent danger in their area because of this app and because of intercepting this thing. Something that you wouldn't hear about that might be happening around the block. You see a helicopter over your neighborhood. You wonder, why is that helicopter circling? You'll probably find the answer inside this app. All right, that's going to do it for today's podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you want links to stuff I mentioned, the important stuff, you can find it in the show notes or on my website, richontech.tv. Otherwise, thanks so much for listening. I do appreciate it. Share this podcast with a friend. Let them know that you're listening to this. Post it to social media. Be sure to tag me at Rich on Tech so that I can see it and also, you know, heart it or retweet it or restory it or whatever you do, whatever platform that you post it to. You can find me on KTLA most mornings around 5 a.m., 7 a.m., and 9 a.m., and of course, assorted other times throughout the day on KTLA Channel 5 in Los Angeles, other TV stations. Follow me on Twitter at Rich DeMuro. On Facebook, I am at Rich on Tech. And on Instagram, where I've been doing a lot now these days, I'm also at Rich on Tech. This podcast is Rich on Tech. Thanks so much for listening. My website, richontech.tv. How many times can I say Rich on Tech before the end of the show? Rich on Tech, Rich on Tech, Rich on Tech. Have a great day. I'll talk to you guys real soon. Bye-bye.